Rachel, did you wiggle? Did you dance a little bit? And that was the whole point of playing that music. That's Eddie Harris and David Newman and Hayward Henry, all on saxophone. We have as well Jody Christian on piano, Joe Newman on trumpet, Joe Wallets on percussion, along with the great Ray Barretto and Mel Lassie and Richard Smith on drums. This is from the 1968 album, The Electrifying Eddie Harris, Plug Me In. The reference there is to Eddie Harris as the inventor, if you will, of electrifying musical instruments. And we just got treated to an example of his work. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're back together again. Regular Free Your Mind Friday. We had a lagniap yesterday. You got an extra day to make up for the days we missed with each other when our equipment was snowbound. But everything is okay, and all the adjustments have been made, and I'm delighted once again to be with you and to invite you in to Free Your Mind Friday. What is Free Your Mind Friday, you may ask, if you're just joining us? It's an open forum. It welcomes you to sound off, not in an irrational way, but to offer a considered opinion about something you deem to be very important and we should consider. And that's the whole point. There's nothing more to it than that. Straightforward and simple. But you've got to have an opinion. Please have an opinion. Don't just go rambling. I'll be forced to apply the axe and mix you. No, you should have an opinion about something. And it doesn't matter. This is what I say all the time. It does not matter whether people agree or disagree. In fact, it's great if they do either of those things. But it is important that you express yourself in such a way as to persuade us, the listeners, the people who are paying attention to what you're saying, as to your point of view. So that if people want to argue against it, they're clear about what it is you have said. Some people are pretty uneasy about this business of having an opinion. Well, this is not the place for you. You can't be here and not have an opinion. Okay, that's the number one rule. Have an opinion, and particularly a considered opinion. That is, you have weighed a subject, and you have looked at it from all its different angles that you think are important to inspect, and then you have come to a conclusion about something. What is that something? Only you will know, and we will be on the receiving end of your knowledge and information. And somebody listening to you may just take you on and may disagree. They, too, have to prove the substance of their thinking. They're not just here to say, well, I disagree. No, that's not enough. You have to at least give us some reasons as to why you disagree. If you have determined in what I've said that it is about getting us used to the idea of dealing with conflicting points of view, ours and somebody else's, but making sure that we have thought about the counterpoint clearly enough to make a very good argument to the contrary of whatever it is you disagree with. Okay? So that's it. That's all it is. It's Free Your Mind Friday. I'm delighted to be with you. And let's get started. The number to call is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And first up is the first person who calls. Would that be you? Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, Incredible Utrice.
Hey, Incredible Harvey, what's going on?
Well, first of all, you're a blessing to us all. I just want to say that. And
that's so sweet to say.
And, yeah, and we love you. And today, I'd like to share a renewable energy idea with you and your vast audience that could end up saving a lot of lives, as well as preventing the destruction of millions of dollars worth of large residential, commercial, educational, and government buildings. Simply put, there are many parts of the world that are getting a lot more snow during the winter months. The problem is that the snow that covers solar rooftop insulations can block the sunlight from reaching the panel's solar cells so they can generate clean, renewable electricity. Besides blocking sunlight, the buildup of snow and ice during snowstorms can pose a serious hazard to both people and property. This is not a new phenomenon. On January 29th in 1922, nearly 100 people died when the flat roof on the Knickerbocker Theater, located in Washington, D.C., collapsed from a record snowfall. And over the years, many buildings with flat rooftops, many large buildings with flat rooftops, like those found on commercial, educational, government-type buildings, have collapsed from the snow buildup, leading to injury and death. My solution to these two problems is the development of what I call snowler panels. That's spelled S-N-O-W-L-E-R panels, snowler panels instead of solar panels. Snowler panels would have regular or optically transparent defrosting strips like those found on car windshields affixed to the underside of the solar panel's tempered glass or transparent polycarbonate cover. Electric grid-tied snowler panels or a in-house battery storage unit would supply the electricity that's needed to power the snowler panel's defrosting strips. And because the snowler panels are installed at a 45-degree pitch, the water from the melted snow and ice would flow off the snowler panels into a rooftop drainage system so that there's no H2O buildup. And after the snowstorm has passed, thanks to snowler panels, the frosting strips, the building's large rooftop is safe from collapse, and there's no snow buildup to block the sun's light from generating clean, renewable electricity. And besides defrosting strips that are used to heat up the solar panels, there is the possibility that electrifying the photovoltaic panel's solar cells themselves could warm up and generate the heat that's needed to melt the storm's snow and ice. So solar panels can also be a blessing for people who own residential solar installations in many snow-covered regions of the world. So, and it's time to get star-powered. Let's get solar, and I just want to say much love, and thank you, Utrice, for giving us a voice to speak our truth.
Thank you so much. Thank you very, very much for that, your contribution today. 888-874-4888. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
How are you doing today, Utrice?
Okay, Jeremiah,
well.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I just wanted to talk about the division that's been created in this country on the grounds of these vaccine mandates and the vaccine policy. And I don't know what it is. I'm wondering, is it a psychological, social thing for the people who have committed to this experimental project, or is it like a chemically induced thing? at this point in terms of once you've received one of these shots, you know, you're prone to some sort of alteration in your personality. But one thing I've known, or one thing I've noticed, I should say, is that, you know, a lot of my relationships have changed, and I know I'm not the only one. I've heard about a lot of this in some cases, just a lot more severe than what I've actually experienced. But there are friends that I haven't spoken with in a while, and I have debated with former activist comrades. I mean, people I've actually done organizing with and real hands-on, on-the-ground activist work with. And one thing I've noticed from the people who have bought into this project is that, you know, there's a dismissiveness in how they communicate. You know, there's this need to, again, either call you an anti-vaxxer is the most popular label. And I'm, as I made clear to all the people I've debated with, I'm not an anti-vaxxer per se. Not that I think there's something wrong with someone holding those particular views, but I have two young children who have both received conventional vaccines. But, you know, if you refuse or are hesitant about these novel vaccines, then you get labeled anti-vaxxer, conspiracy theorist. I find it really strange, but it's very popular to call people right-winger when, you know, I'm just not right-wing in my orientation, never have been, and certainly not now. But, you know, if you're hesitant about taking an injection into your body, then you get labeled with some kind of political orientation. And it really struck me when I was arguing, debating, whatever you want to call it, in messaging, not a verbal argument, but messaging back and forth with an old friend of mine. He said, I'm not interested in talking to you anymore. I'm not going down this rabbit hole anymore. And, you know, I just find it really interesting because, you know, that individual who I've known for 20 years, when he first met me, I hadn't become a chess teacher yet. I was a newcomer on the electric bass. I had done some gigs and I was kind of starting my professional career. But now, years later, I'm an experienced bass player. I've been on the road with over a dozen bands. I've played in countless venues. I've played in different countries around the world, all around the country. I've been teaching chess for 20 years. And now I have the additional responsibility of being a father of two beautiful children, which adds a whole other level of responsibility and richness to my life. And I just thought about that, and I'm like, wow, you know, you're dismissing me in this way. And I've noticed, not just from him, but this air of dismissiveness, which to me is not the essence whatsoever of the People's Movement. The People's Movement is the opposite, where we take interest in each other and we give each other an opportunity to speak and we respect each other's views. And it's like, you know, if I were down and out and had fallen into alcoholism or whatever, I would still expect my friends to have some love for me, to have some regard for me. But the fact of the matter is that that's not the case. I'm physically well, I'm mentally on point, and I have a great sense of purpose in my life. And I just find, you know, people should really question the righteousness of their position if it involves being dismissive of their friends or just the ordinary so-called person in their community. I think that we should be patient with each other and we should be interested in each other's points of view. But something about the people who have committed to this experiment, it involves, I've noticed, a dismissiveness. And I think it stems from, you know, sort of an elitist, sort of a smug elitist attitude that unfortunately many people have cultivated.
Could it be that attitude basically is a safeguard for the people who exhibit such an attitude, that they,
I think you're exactly right.
They are invincible in their beliefs when they can repel a threat to it.
Yeah, I think people tend to operate using such mechanisms.
Hmm. So there you go. You're in a workshop. Your
exactly.
Circumstances have put you in a workshop. And it seems to me that you're handling it okay, of trying to understand this change, you know? Trying to understand it, and trying to understand also that it doesn't belong to you.
This, absolutely.
And this Lord does not belong to you.
Exactly. And I'll just say in closing that, you know, that what you just said right there is exactly it, Etrice, which is that, and a good friend of mine who shares many similar views on this subject, and we've been sort of communicating about it for a while, he made the point, and I totally agree, which is that they're always welcomed to rejoin the people's movement. We never excluded them. It was them who tried to exclude us on certain basis, but that's not our movement. You can always rejoin the people whenever you would like. I've rejected no one. I've insulted no one. I just would like the right to maintain my own body autonomy. In fact, I have a good friend who worked for a pharmaceutical company on the bureaucratic side and had witnessed some of the scandals internal to the corporation. And it was from this good friend who, she made an excellent point, which is you don't ever take a medication that hasn't been on the market for at least 5 years. So on that, I base my decision on that statement alone.
Thank you for contributing today and bringing to our attention.
Thank you.
You know, in a very interesting, it feels indirect, but it is a very powerful lesson that you ask us to consider here. What accounts for it? And you find out that very many people are threatened. They don't have the nerve to admit it to themselves or to share it with anybody else. But being different from what they expected you to be is very threatening, simply because you feel different. Thank you.
It is very true. Thank you.
Gino from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Good day, Sister Eutrice.
Good day, Gino. What's going on in your world?
Well,
what have you to say today?
Oh, I got quite a bit. I want to say I follow two home run hitters there. Very well said, Jeremiah. I sound like a man of democracy. And Berkeley or California or Harvey, I tried to get on before him so I could go in the kitchen and get some vitamin D, open the window, put a towel, but Harvey got there ahead of me. But that's okay. So, and to you, I want to say thanks. I want to say thanks. First of all, with all the communication.
I said, you're very welcome. I don't know what you're thanking me for, but...
Well, I'm going to say it now.
I welcome your thanks.
Well, the thing is that we didn't... I didn't know what happened to you, because, you know, when you're not there, I got you... I'm just hoping everything's okay with your health. And then I thought, also communications, so not to just put that thought out there. I said, maybe communications, and then we discovered, equipment was buried away in Jersey. So I want to thank, the powers that be there, just the Elohim, the Tunker Shiller, the Tao, the way of virtual life. I want to thank Ra. I want to thank Jehovah, Allah. I want to thank the invisible creative intelligence responsible for all the visible things we see. And for those who haven't come to a belief of creative being, I want to thank the accidental bang that created the accidental Eutrice.
Okay.
So that was the beginning. So my thoughts are, I heard that... Dr. Luc Montagnier passed away, and this is a quote from him. He said, Dr. Joseph Goebbels wrote that a lie told once remains a lie, but a lie told a thousand times becomes the truth. Tragically for humanity, there are many, many untruths emanating from Fauci and his minions. RFK Jr. exposes the decades of lies. Now, I've been reading Robert F. Kennedy's book, The Real Anthony Fauci. It's, oh my God, I'm only up to page 40, and to be honest, it's like almost like 2 years of Gary's talks and 40 pages, and I still got a lot to go with these 2,500 citations. Going deeper, peeling back the onion on the reports, the studies, the oppression of the things that worked that wouldn't have allowed for emergency measures if they would have admitted that they worked. So that's, I highly recommend the book to folks. There is one other lie I found with Fauci I haven't heard repeated on the airway yet, and that was one where he was trying to encourage people to get their kids vaccinated like he did when he was young in grade school. The only problem with that was, and he indicated for measles and mumps, but they weren't available, those shots, till 63 and 67, and he attended grade school in the 1940s, so there's another lie to the other ones he's admitted over the years with herd immunity and, the other ones that we all know by now. Other thing is, I have a quote from somebody. Do you know who this is?
No.
Liberty.
I haven't heard the quote.
Here we go. The liberty of a democracy is not safe if the people tolerate the growth of private power to a point where it becomes stronger than their democratic state itself. That is, in essence, is fascism, ownership of government by an individual, by a group. We had to struggle with the old enemies of peace, business and financial monopoly, speculation, reckless banking, class antagonism, sectionalism, war profiteering. They had begun to consider that government of the United States as a mere appendage to their own affairs. We know now that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob. Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred. You know who said that?
I have no idea.
FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And that's from Jimmy Dore's book. I got that. I just finished his book, Your Country's Just Not That Into You. That's from 2014. I saw a movie the other day called Monopoly. A preview was played on the air from Gary's show the other day with the movie, with the visuals. Oof, I got to admit, I got tears in my eyes watching the thing for what's going on and the conciseness, what he presented that with. So that was just some of the issues I wanted to bring up today that was on my mind. Read the real Anthony Fauci book. I had to get it online because the bookstores didn't have it. When I got it, it was 700,000 copies. It's up to 800,000. And you want the facts and the figures presented by a lawyer, it's like putting a pyramid together. You can't stick anything between the bricks. I highly recommend the reading of it. And again, I'm glad that you're still with us, Utrice. And now
I'm still with you.
You're still with us.
what'd you say? Thank you, Juno, for contributing today. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. All right.
888-874-4888. We have up next Marcus from Wisconsin.
Good afternoon, Utrice. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
As always. I'd like to sort of quickly address a lot of the political discussions that go on here, and more specifically to Jeremiah's quandary. I have noticed for 50 years that fascism and its principles, what's important in any field is structure. What is the structure? Not the details, not the gab, not the rhetoric, but the structure. That's because that tells you what its real properties are. And I have noticed over 50 years that fascism in the United States is so normalized that if you point it out, people think it's hyperbole. And this is part of what Jeremiah is experiencing with his friends. You know, I have people in my neighborhood who occasionally say, well, you know, the government wants to put a microchip in your head and control your behavior. And, you know, that's probably true in certain ways, in many manifestations. But I say to them, you know, let's assume you're right. Let's say they put a microchip in your head. Would you be behaving much differently than you do now? Would you not go to work when you're told? Would you not sit in front of a screen hours and hours a day? Would you not go to Disneyland to have fun when you're supposed to? Would you not play out all the roles appropriate to your age and sex and status? What would you do differently? And people just stare at you because they don't have an answer. So because of this, because fascism is so normalized in the United States, it's accepted by the left and the right because they don't see the structure of it. We have, you know, the Democrat versus Republican story, you know, this comic book version of power politics, in which if you take it seriously, you can only ask the wrong questions. And if you're only asking the wrong questions, power doesn't care what answers you get. The point is you degrade yourself by following nonsense. So people who don't know when they're free don't know when they're slaves either. And so what we call American democracy has been totalitarian for many decades. And it's basically people who engage in the accepted political rhetoric are really just people cheating at solitaire together. That's what they're really doing, because there's no factual, structural basis for what they're doing. What they're actually doing is going on Facebook and profiling themselves for the government and big corporations that they then complain are oppressing them. So we don't have science. We have corporate astrology. You're sick until you're proven healthy. And people buy this because otherwise you can't feel like you're an accepted part of the data dragnet, the biotechnology surveillance state, the electronic gulag that is daily life. You see? Master Matthew Hopkins, the most excellent, most wise, most terrible witchfinder general of the 1640s, if you asked him how he knew who was a witch and who wasn't and who should be burned at the stake, he'd say, well, I know from experience. You see, because he had internalized all the accepted stereotypes of what's normal. And he didn't call it totalitarian or authoritarian, although they had words for that. He said, no, I'm saving the children. Of course you have to burn the children of witches, because otherwise, it will infect others. The structure of the story is no different. We're just buying the new version of it in our ignorance, because we won't penetrate what we ourselves have accepted as normal. So this is the root of the behavior Jeremiah is experiencing. You're part of the outgroup. You're not looking for witches to burn. So you're one of them. That's all. We have to ask ourselves to be deeper than that, add a little depth to our thinking, and exercise our minds. It's the only way out.
Wow. I have to go back to this offering of yours and hear it again, because I'm not sure I got everything. There's a lot of information and knowledge you shared here, and I feel a need to go back and listen perhaps more slowly, because it's a complex offering that you gave us today. Thank you so much, Marcus, for calling
in. Thank you very much, Utrecht, and to all your really astute listeners. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrecht.
Good afternoon, E. What's going on with you?
Oh, I wanted to talk about the news, the press, where we're supposed to get our stories and facts and hopefully truths from, to when we want to find out about what's going on in the world today and tomorrow and the next day. And we depend on the news, and we've always depended on the news to keep us up to date. Some people watch the news just to get the weather reports and the sports. And some people like to get the news about everything going on in the world, and internationally and right here in this country. And I have this suspicion that there's some kind of an arrangement has been going on with the with the networks of the news and all the stations and all the people that work for these different networks are all like in some kind of a cabal or something. And I know I spoke of this before. Back in 1968, a new news format came out called Eyewitness News with Roger Grimsby and Bill Butel. And Geraldo Rivera was a young man of maybe 25. He was just starting out on the station. And they made it a whole different kind of a news format where it was exciting. And that's when news became entertainment, not just telling us the stories of what's going on. It became entertainment. And I don't know if they intentionally did it to change things like that, or if they were just looking to raise their ratings and they thought that this would be a good way to do it. But Bill, do you know Roger Grimsby, Bill Butel? Do you remember them?
Well, sure. Absolutely.
Okay, so Roger was the kind of like the jokester, and Bill Butel was the straight man, and they'd be sitting next to each other, and they'd tell jokes, and they'd laugh, and they'd had inside jokes, and it was all very amusing. And I was taken in by it. I was like 15, 16 years old, and at 6 o'clock, I put on that like it was a regular TV show, you know, something that was going to entertain me, and I enjoyed watching that kind of a news format. For some reason, it was interesting and funny. But I know that's not what news really supposed to be. We're supposed to be...
You're getting somewhere now.
But I don't think Roger Grimsby and Bill Butel intentionally planned that out. I think it just happened by accident that people just like to be entertained. And it's just the way it is. And even when it becomes to the news. And ever since then, it all changed, and they cared about their anchor person had to be handsome and beautiful, and everything was hype, and everything was, you know, out of whack with the news. And people that were born in the 40s, 50s, 60s, they got used to a certain kind of news format where you got the news, and they told you what was going on in the world and here and there. But now it's all sensationalism. It's all became like the National Enquirer, the newspaper. Nobody would buy that one. It had all weird stories in it. You buy the News or the Mirror or the Herald Tribune or the Times or the Post or all those papers. But this guy Murdoch, I think, bought up most of them and changed those papers also. The papers changed just like the Eyewitness News changed. Anyway, the point I'm getting to is now we're really in a ridiculous place because I can't understand how people are buying this, that this could actually be true. How could Fox Network and all their employees, everybody that's on the air, including Sean Hannity and the rest of their crew that are on, they all love the Republicans and Donald Trump. How is it possible that everybody that works has to be a Republican lover and a Trump lover? Just Fox News. Now, NBC, CBS, ABC, MSNBC, MSN, whatever, all the other ones, and even National Public Radio, which you would think would be for the people and not be biased in any way, all of them are favoring the Democrats, and all the Democrat politicians, and everything that they do is great, and they make fun of Donald Trump and the Republicans. So, and Fox does the exact same thing in reverse to the Democrats and Biden. They're all making fun. So it seems to me that directing the people that voted for Trump, that thinks he's a good person to be their leader, they're directing them to Fox Network for some reason. And you know, that would give them a pretty good amount of people listening to that station. And you notice, I watch Channel 4 News at night just to see what stories they're going to make up and what lies they're spreading. And that's what I watch that news for. And when I want to get real news, I listen to PRN and stations such as that. I don't know if BAI anymore. I haven't listened in a long time. But I know even BAI and NP and PRN, we might favor the Green Party in opposition of just this Republican and Democrat duopoly or one-party system. So we want to give the Green Party a little light. So there's the only two stations really that are, that give that. But, you know, it's a different thing the way they have this set up. And I can't understand how it could be possible that everybody that works for Fox Network loves Donald Trump and the Republican Party, and everybody else on all the other news networks love the Democrats and all of the Democrat politicians. I don't understand how that could be possible. So therefore,
well, not only could it be possible, it is possible and has been possible, and the nation as a whole is witnessing and has been witnessing, whether people are paying attention, close attention or not, to the evolution of mass media. This is what mass media really means. The controlling of attitudes and opinions and actions on a massive scale through the use of media. We have only begun to nip around the edges of this question. We haven't really gone into it on a one-on-one basis, you know, where people stop what they're doing for a minute and study the role of media in shaping their everyday lives, their decisions, how they live, what they're thinking. And it's moving so fast, you don't have enough time to really set aside and study it. But it is soon going to be that time, very soon. You're making a very strong point here today, E, and I'm glad for it. We'll take this short break, come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. I'm loving it. Today's a great day. I encourage you to dance a little bit too. You know, it's part of the program. Swivel the hips and give yourself a little bit of joy for the day. From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
How's it going?
It's going. How's by you?
Oh, it's going. We got a heat wave. It's 40 degrees outside right now.
Oh, heat wave in Chicago.
Yes, it is. It's a heat wave. I'm glad to hear you back on the air. I wanted to ask you this because, you know, before long time ago, before you started programs, you used to timestamp your programs. So, you know, I was wondering why you had stopped that, because the only way I know that your show is a rerun is if I listen to, you know, if there's no music playing in the beginning and I listen to the first, like, 5 minutes of it and I'm like, oh, yeah, I heard this one before. So I was just wondering, like, why you had stopped timestamping your shows.
Well, for one thing, you never know when things mechanically could go wrong. You just never prepared. I wasn't prepared. Nobody was prepared for the fact that a piece of equipment that we were depending on just would be snowbound for more than a week. And, well, what do? You can't transmit anything. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So you go into crisis mode and you figure out something, and the best thing to do is to reach for programs that you think people might enjoy hearing again, and that could get you through a bad situation. So I didn't timestamp programs because that's exactly the point. Some programs have a long shelf life, and it may turn people off when they hear from the beginning, this is a program from 1946. Who wants to listen?
Yeah. Well, you rediscover sometimes
things that you thought you had heard one way, and new revelations. You enjoy it all over again.
Well, if you did a program in 1946, I would love to hear that.
I was even born in 1946.
But, you know, I had came in late a little bit, and I was listening to Marcus talk. And, you know, Marcus, you know, from my personal opinion, he sounds weird, but I don't use that as a pejorative. I use that as a sign of respect, because Marcus is kind of a, you know, he's a philosopher from what I'm hearing from him. And philosophers sometimes, you know, when I read them, when I hear them, you know, they kind of make me sound, you know, like sound ignorant, because I'm like, okay, what are you saying? But there's always something in there to unpack from what they say. And so that's why, you know, just like you said, I got to go back and listen to what he said again.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I said, when I say he's weird, that's not, you know, that's not any disrespect. That actually is a sign of respect for me, because I got to understand what he's saying. But what I did catch from what he said was about, I guess, a previous caller, Jeremiah, talking about inserting chips. Now, I didn't hear what Jeremiah said, before him, but the thing about it is that I guess deducing what Marcus had said in regards to that, you know, I always take the lowest common denominator and try to understand that we are all being surveilled, you know, whether they have chips implemented or not. I mean, you know, the thing is that we are under surveillance capitalism right now, as we speak on this, you know, on this line. I always make the assumption that maybe they got a camera somewhere in my house watching me. But that's the, you know, like I said, I believe that we are all being surveilled. But the bigger question is, how are they controlling our thoughts, and how are they controlling our minds and our behaviors? Now, that's the question we have to, you know, we need to really ask ourselves and really discover. Because
who are these there that you're talking about?
Oh, we're talking about a combination of entities. When we're talking about the government, when we're talking about corporations, when we're talking about industries who are trying to capture data, to make a profit, trying to capture certain things that we do as far as what our buying habits are, what our spending habits are, where we go for leisure, what we say, you know, on, you know, radio stations, on podcasts, what we type in on social media, just various stuff. And this is all information that is housed for these corporations, these governments to, you know, kind of predict, you know, what we're going to do next. I think somebody mentioned yesterday about the young woman who committed suicide. And, you know, she made a post on Facebook. And, you know, he was going through this argument about, you know, how Facebook, you know, may have caused her suicide. And, you know, that's, yeah, I know you pushed back against it. And you know, it is kind of questionable. But, you know, there was a report done on the Wall Street Journal about how they were doing data studies on the effects of social media on young girls. And they found it very horrifying that many of them have, their self-esteem, I guess, the way they, I don't know how they measured it, but according to the report, it was basically the self-esteem of young girls that they were studying had went down. And so that's kind of interesting how, you know, they captured that data. And so this is what I'm saying, you know, we should all automatically assume that we are all being surveilled, but can they control our thoughts? And in some ways, I think they can. And it's through a lot of
every day, imaging. Every day, our thoughts are controlled. Our actions are controlled. The question is, are we aware enough? And even if we are aware, what can we do or what do we do about it?
Well,
The whole business, the whole field of advertising, and it merged with the emergence of newspapers and so forth. If you go back and you study when different components of our society came about, and you see a certain point at which there's a merging of interests. It's about power, but it is about money. You're talking about it in an esoteric way that people are interested in what you're thinking. No, they're not. They're interested in what you're thinking insofar as it would influence how you're spending your money or how you can be persuaded to spend your money. If they were, you and the Marcus and E from Edgewater, you're not interesting people, except for that. We think we are so important. No, we're not. We are important, but for entirely different reasons than we surmise. This is a rigidly, viciously capitalistic society. Everything, or practically everything, involves money and how to make it. What will be the impetus to make you dig into your pocket and pull out a $10 note and go blow it on something?
Mm-hmm.
And what would that something be? You have to be primed. You have to be, you have to become accustomed to how to spend money the way they want you to spend money. Not spending money is not at all to be tolerated. You can't save money. That's why most savings banks are almost done. They're out. What good is a savings bank in a capitalistic society?
Yeah.
Are you saving money? Are you mad?
Or are you doing something productive with it, like buying something that will increase in value?
No, the thing is, they don't care about you increasing the value of your money. They care about, the care is about your contributing to the aggregate wealth of the country.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about, you're very good and you're very judicious in how you spend your money. You're the worst nightmare to the system if you focus on saving money and teaching your children and your family how to save money and so forth. They'll tell you, plain and simple, you're a fool.
Oh, yeah.
Because money is not doing anything. It's not growing. You're not growing anything with your money. Investing is what you ought to be doing with your money. Take a chance and see. You may lose it, but, it's good for the experience.
Well, they often interchange these words of investment and gambling, which I think they're encouraging more people to gamble, but they use the word investment a lot. And
investment, yes. Real estate, the whole thing. Take a look at Trump. All right, you only need to go back two generations. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
His grandfather, who made his money, his wealth, was predicated on what? Drugs and prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
His father made money. use that money to make more money. His father introduced the concept in New York City of white Bantustans, gated communities. Where no black person, unless you're providing a service, you're taking care of the children, you're cleaning the house, something like that. But you can't live there.
Yeah.
So going hand in glove with this notion of racial superiority is the notion of how you build wealth. And that is not a democratic process. It has nothing at all to do with democracy. And now in the present generation, let's say the generation of Donald Trump, everybody knows, it's not a secret, he's not that bright. On an equal basis, he could never get into a Harvard or Yale or something like that, or even a Howard University, God help us. He could never do that.
But you know,
he does not have the brains, does not have anything going for him except he is, you know, he's sitting on a nice bit of cash. And his job is to make that cash make more cash. And now his children. So you see what I'm saying is, we fool ourselves into thinking that people of wealth are special. They have special abilities. And no, they just have a system. Their system is a closed system.
Yeah, Eutrice, and that's something that I wanted to touch on real quick, because Trump is basically is symbolic to this notion that, you know, everybody can achieve this so-called American dream. Look at Trump.
Okay.
He got it.
Okay.
And this is what they're feeding to us. They're feeding, and that's why I say that this word investment is being thrown out like it's candy, but it's actually gambling. Because, you know, they're encouraging us to invest in Bitcoin and invest in all these other things that, you know, to me, they sound like Ponzi schemes to me.
And but your ancestors actually had an entirely different point of reference about how you grow wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth is in land. Wealth is in growing a family that can carry on all the traditions that they've learned. That's wealth.
And that's the investment we miss. That's the investment we should be investing in, is family and relationships.
That's it. And at the same time, there's evidence they also owned banks. They also own property, many of them, but their whole thought process was different because they did not see it that a primary function of wealth is the domination of others, the ownership of others. To this day, the United States has not figured out that is central to its economic failures. It keeps pursuing the domination of others.
Well, we have to change the value system of that, because for me, you know, if I can go into a city where I have good relationships with other people, I can actually live good without spending a dime, because I know people would take care of me. And when people come into Chicago or the Chicagoland area that I know, they don't have to pay for a hotel or anything like that. They can stay at my place and not spend one dime. This is the wealth that we really need to focus on, relationships with other people, our family, our friends, so we won't have to have you know, this monetary value of what wealth is. And wealth, like you said, family, friends, relationships. This is the wealth we need to build.
Amen. Amen, Reverend Henry.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you.
Thank you all for calling in and contributing. This, I can't even tell you how joyful I am, and I become on Free Your Mind Friday. This is what we ought to be doing. Really talking to each other about things that genuinely concern us. And it is, in fact, a very underrated weapon in our arsenal for survival. We don't pay it very much mind, but it is critical to our continuation in this, in the way we're going. We have something to offer. We have insights, we have expertise and experience. We just don't share it with each other very much. And yet it is invaluable. You can't buy this. You have to pay a lot of money to some guy who barely scraped out of the college. But look at the wisdom that we have, inherent wisdom. And we ought to use it wisely, and we ought to cherish it as well. We ought to cherish it. Thank you so much. It's the weekend. I always advise that you take some time and savor the moment. Do something that uplifts you and others. And try to keep yourself together. Surround yourselves with people who bring good things into your life, and certainly leave those people who don't bring good things into your life. And I shall see you, hopefully, as Maya Angelou would say, God willing and the creek don't rise, on Monday. And we start this all over again. Bye-bye.